Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Chad Predator Riley.
Hoo-ah!
And Spencer Alien Williams.
Hey.
Hey.
That's such a friendly alien.
We're, you know, every time we do this part, I've listened back already to the last, like, four episodes. You guys have, like, the weirdest responses when I introduce
you
guys.
What do you want me to say to Alien Spencer Williams? What was the preferred response?
Hey, what's up, guys? Or something to the effect of that you're here and we're not, we don't have you strapped
hey,
to a chair.
That's, like, the first part of what you just said.
That's true.
Also,
you catch us unawares. So, I mean, how are we gonna think on our feet?
Ah, well, let's hope you guys got your thinking caps on today, because we have a great show in store as we're going to be talking about the upcoming film, The Predators. So stick around. But before we do, Chad, give him a little bit of that info.
Sure will. We might be invisible to the eye, but never fear. The Filmlosophers podcast is still brought to you, as always, by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. The truth is, we can't upgrade your biology and make you a more resilient and deadly sport hunter, but we can enhance your movie know-how on an ongoing basis. Don't miss an episode. Subscribe to The Filmlosophers on your favorite streaming platforms, including Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom. New episodes drop each Wednesday morning. Spencer, where else can they find us?
That scaly skin and fearsome toothy grin you see in your newsfeed? Yeah, that's not us. We're actual human beings. And you can connect with us at any time via social media. Simply like our page on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Whether aliens have been visiting our planet for years or not, you certainly have no excuse to sit still any longer. We have a collection of over 100 episodes just waiting to be listened to. Access them on our website at filmlosophers.com.
That's right. This is lesson 130. So we've got quite a bit of episodes for you to peruse through. But before you do, make sure you listen to this one, because we got some great stuff to talk about. As I mentioned earlier, we are going to be talking about The Predator, the film that is set to debut this upcoming Friday. So if you're listening to this when the episode drops, it's this upcoming Friday.
And we know you all are. We know that you stay up until midnight, until the clock strikes 12, so you can listen to new episodes of The Filmlosophers as soon as they're available.
Yes. We all dream that. Right, Spence?
Music!
Oh, gosh. Good heavens, what was that?
That was an alien. As we said, we're going to be talking about The Predator, so... Before we jump into that, Chad, give him that official synopsis goodness.
I sure will. The universe's most lethal hunters are stronger, smarter, and deadlier than ever before, having genetically upgraded themselves with DNA from other species. When a young boy accidentally triggers their return to Earth, only a ragtag crew of ex-soldiers and a disgruntled science teacher can prevent the end of the human race.
That is a highly debatable synopsis.
I didn't write it. I'm just reading it.
The man is just reporting the news.
I do agree with you, though. That is completely inaccurate. Like, not completely, but largely inaccurate.
Largely inaccurate and a bit spoilery to some, like, minor things in the movie.
That's true, which means that we have free reign to spoil some things, too.
Well, we're going to try not to spoil too much.
Oh, we're going to spoil.
Directed by Shane Black, the film stars Boyd Holbrook, Trevante Rhodes, Jacob Tremblay, Keegan-Michael Key, Olivia Munn, Thomas Jane, Alfie Allen, and Sterling K. Brown. Mr. This Is Us himself.
That's right.
The film
debuted... Very different role for him here.
Oh, 100%. This was really awkward.
Him and his Nicorette.
Oh my gosh. This film debuted a week ago at the Toronto International Film Festival... And the film was directed and co-written as a sequel to 1987's Predator, 1990's Predator 2, and 2010's Predators. So apparently, the Predator films, aside from the Alien vs. Predator, are all in one singular universe. So this is supposed to be a sequel or a continuation off of that storyline. Director Shane Black had played Hawkins in the original film, so if you weren't aware, there's a very crude and kind of rather crass individual soldier that's in the first film, and Shane Black plays that particular character. So,
and now he's in the director's chair and co-wrote the screenplay for this one.
That he did. Unfortunately, Arnold Schwarzenegger did turn down the role to return as Dutch. So I guess another spoiler is that you won't be seeing Arnold Schwarzenegger in the film.
Hashtag sorry, not sorry.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is this, is that when it comes to like films like this, so we kind of talked about this last week when we talked about sci-fi with Kin.
Right.
And where the sci-fi genre
lesson kind of, 129 for those of you keeping score at home.
That's right. When it comes to the sci-fi genre, the 80s kind of began to really have a lot of fun with it. And so you had films like Aliens. You had films like Predator, the first Predator. You had films like, obviously, Back to the Future, which is very sci-fi-ish. You had a lot of these types of films. Plus, I mean, this was around the time when the actual B-movie genre began to be birthed. You know, things like with Killer Clowns from Outer Space, or things like Critters, you know, Gremlins. You had all this kind of stuff that began to come into the fold and add that kind of B-movie-esque vibe that was still well within that sci-fi realm, in my personal opinion, I think. So this was around the time when that genre began to just blossom into something different and something new. This being a continuation of that story, I think it's safe to say that when you look at a film like this, you can't just compare it to other sci-fi films that are currently happening. Like, you can't look at it and say, okay, let's compare The Predator to last week's film, Kin, and, you know, do that kind of comparison. No. This film is a continuation of an already established franchise. That's like saying when Episode 1 came out, you're not just going to compare Episode 1 to other sci-fi films in that time frame. You're going to compare Episode 1 of Star Wars to Episode 4, 5, and 6. You're going to want to look back and see how it measures up to the already established franchise. Same thing here. You already have an already established franchise that's kind of branched out into a bunch of different aspects. The Predator has actually been not only in movies, but in TV. He was in comics. He's fought Batman in the comic books. There's actually like a three-part series of that.
He not being the same individual Predator every time, but... Yeah, the race, the alien species.
Yes. And so seeing as how well this has been established in current pop culture, you have to look at the franchise as a whole. It's kind of like that whole, you know, the weakest link in the chain kind of mindset. You have to look at every link to see how the whole franchise holds up. Sadly, this is one of those franchises that kind of struggled several times throughout the years. And had a really big misstep, in my opinion, in 2010 with Predators, the film with Adrian Brody as the
lead
actor.
And just to make sure that we're all being very clear, you're the only one who has seen all of the movies in the franchise.
I have.
I've seen a couple. I've seen scenes from another. Spencer saw nothing.
I've only seen this movie.
Here's the thing, real quick. Okay. I told you I was going to wait until the... I said I was going to wait till the podcast, and then we were going to talk about this.
Look at him rev up.
Spencer, how have you not seen the first Predator?
I don't know.
Where has... where did your mind slip in that mindset? For me, when I look at you, Spencer, I see somebody who is actually... or who should be versed in a lot of those... ridiculous types of 80s films because of how much you enjoy B-movies. For somebody who is a B-movie aficionado such as yourself, I would expect you to have at least a precursory knowledge of some of these films that built that.
Now, hold on. I'm going to come to Spencer's defense here.
Nice.
This franchise became B-movie territory in the early 2000s or the late 90s, whenever Alien versus Predator came out. Like, yes, it was this, you know, gory... slash him up, blood fest, battle royale with alien creatures or whatever. But like, that was when it really went off the rails, I think. I mean, obviously, I haven't seen Predators with Adrian Brody in 2010 because it had Adrian Brody in the lead role. I didn't like that. Did not compute, nor was it ever going to. But I don't think that the original was a B movie. Like the original Predator with Arnold, did not. I didn't see it when it came out because I was like 4 or something. But when I did eventually see it, it didn't strike me as a B movie. I thought it was one of those like sci-fi horror, you know, gore fest, suspense, edge of your three seat thriller kind of creature feature things with really good makeup by the time you finally saw the creature.
Oh, 100%. I agree that at the time it wasn't a B movie. It wasn't meant to be a B. But there are so many different tropes and silly little things that came out of that film, especially when you introduce somebody like Arnold Schwarzenegger into this type of framework of a film, and knowing everything that he does in just about every film he did from the 80s all the way through, his quips, you know, throwing a knife at somebody and them getting stuck to the wood and then him saying stick around. I mean, some of the stuff he would say was it was a constant, like,
it was a product of its time.
It was great. Like,
timeless product of its time.
You know, coming up with like things like telling the Predator you're, you know, one ugly whatever, you know,
right,
that has stood the test of time in terms of one of those unique statements that come out of a film. The film has kind of been one of those types of entities where people, it may not have been a B movie, but people sure as heck have taken bits and pieces from that to establish their own B movie franchise or entity in itself. In my mind, what do you think, Spence? Being the B movie aficionado who has not seen Predator.
Yeah, it makes it really hard to speak about it.
Having no context to answer this question, what is your response, sir?
Yeah, I don't know. I was mostly spending the movie like just wandering off in my mind. It's like, have I seen Predator
while we were watching the okay.
Yeah, because, I'm glad, like, to hear that it captured your attention. No, because, and, and grabbed hold of it and kept that the whole time.
And, like, the entire time I kept thinking about Commando and I was like, oh, I must not have seen this movie, which I was actually kind of surprised about because, like, now I have an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie to go see. And now I'm gonna cherish that and go watch it.
Nice. He's gonna cherish it.
Oh, so, my gosh, we're gonna go watch the first Predator.
Warm fuzzies.
And that's how,
who knew the Predator would give you warm fuzzies for vintage Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'm still salty about it. I'm still gonna be
salty.
Jinx. Okay. But yeah, so you look at the franchise as a whole, you have to compare it to pretty much the entire franchise and its impact in not only sci-fi but just cinema altogether. And that can be perceived from people who have not seen all the films. You've seen the footprint the films have made in other films, and especially seeing where this particular film kind of helped launch some of the opportunities for certain tropes in other sci-fi films or even certain performers' careers. So that kind of footprint you can still measure and see. So that's what we're gonna. That's what I'm gonna rely on with Spencer, since Spencer hasn't seen any of them.
Well, I thought I could bring a perspective of someone who hasn't seen them, so that, you know, people who haven't seen the other ones could be like, oh, maybe.
Let me ask you this, Spence: when you go to a math test, do you not study any of the math and then just kidding.
What kind of math is it? Do you already know? Because then no, I wouldn't study if I already know the subject.
No.
I think that was a double helping of salt, folks. I'm the only one who didn't dish out.
Well,
but here's my thing though: like, whether you've seen the movie or not, whether you've seen the precursors or not, this movie still needs to stand on its own. True. Obviously, it's been 31 years since the first one came out in 1987. So if they're going to cultivate a new audience or keep the existing audience engaged, they need to have a movie that can stand well on its own.
Correct.
So I think that's a good spot for us to kind of dig in a little bit and talk about whether it stands on its own.
I agree. So kind of jumping right into this, let's go ahead and talk about expectations. Obviously, we'll go around the table and give as much of our expectations as we had based on what we've known or what we've seen or... Yeah.
You want to start salt in a container and selling it?
Go ahead, Spence. What were some of your expectations based on what you haven't seen?
Wow. Ooh, salty.
So I had very few. But yeah, no, I was just expecting to see like a big alien monster coming and attacking people. Yes, I knew Arnold Schwarzenegger was in it, and that's about it.
Was that this movie or Godzilla? This is a big monster attacking people.
Well, it was a big monster attacking people. That's true for both films.
Okay. I will give you that one.
Oh my God, this is going to be a rough one.
What about you, yeah. Chad?
Let's see. So going into this movie, I totally skipped Predators. Because Adrian Brody is not an action lead, in my opinion. And maybe that's unfair because I never watched the movie, but I skipped it. This one I was excited to see because it's been a little while since... I mean, it's been 8 years since that one. Hard to believe, but it has. So why not give it a chance? There was a lot of buzz before we went to see it about how... Because Shane Black was a performer in the original,
yeah.
There was a lot about the original that he wanted to kind of resurrect in a way and integrate into this new installment because it's more than just fandom. Like, he was in the movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a familiarity level with it that we haven't had before. So I was very hopeful. Obviously, he does some of the more... off the beaten path kind of storytelling, and I was interested to see what he was going to bring to the table most recently in terms of genre or franchise films. He did Iron Man 3, which was a major tonal shift from any of the other Marvel Cinematic Universe films, and it didn't totally succeed. No. But it tried things that were different and new.
It did.
And in many ways more serious. Coming into this one, having watched a couple of the trailers before going to see the press screening, we knew that there were going to be touches of characters who suffered from mental illness, had like a darker past as ex-soldiers. And so I thought, oh, well, we saw what he did with Tony Stark in Iron Man 3 with some of those heavier... weightier issues. I wonder what he's going to do here, because honestly, with something like Predator, the original one, I mean, you've got dark colors, it's at night because you want to emphasize the way that, you know, the Predator alien can see heat signatures regardless of how much light's around, and then the human characters can't see them either because it's dark or because they're invisible or both. And, you know, so I thought, oh, well, there's going to be a lot of weighty, heavy kind of stuff in addition to the action, and I'm wondering how he's going to pull it off. So that was kind of what I was most curious about heading into the theater, was how are we going to balance the sort of the pure entertainment factor of going to a sci-fi horror film with some of these heavier, potentially more dramatic beats with performers who sometimes, like Thomas Jane, you've seen him do dark before, dark and moody, Keegan-Michael Key, who's like mostly comedy all the time, but is also one of these, you know, kind of haunted, wounded, you know, soldiers dealing with mental illness. So I thought, oh, maybe that'll be a turn for him in terms of showing his range as a performer.
Yeah. And that's just to kind of speak a little bit towards what you were just saying. That's one of the things that, you know, you don't really get a chance to see often, especially with characters or performers who are kind of pigeonholed into certain roles. You know, somebody like Keegan-Michael Key, he's only really done comedy. He's only really... I've seen some of his other films. He did an improv film. He did a couple other things, and they were all still based around comedy. So seeing something like him step into a role where he has to have a little bit more depth to him was definitely a draw for me, because of the fact that we've already seen Jordan Peele excel.
Absolutely.
You know, with,
skyrocketed.
Exactly. And it wasn't in comedy. It was in a totally different genre other than what he's been doing prior to. So you look at that trajectory and you're like, okay, let's see what Keegan can do and what Keegan can succeed at. And in all honesty, that was also one of my expectations and hopes, that knowing that they were going to be going this route with the mercenaries / soldiers that were in this film that were having some type of mental illness, I wanted to see if there were layers that they could establish in the film while it still being this sci-fi slasher type gore fest of a film. I mean, let's be honest, it's a Predator movie, so you're going to see right. blood. Oh, wait, Spencer hasn't seen any other one, so in a Predator.
But you knew that going in.
Yeah, no, I mean, knew it was going to be bloody.
Like, heads
like,
gone and arms gone.
Like,
and
you know, rainbows and unicorns and everyone being like, cha-la-la-la-la.
Rainbows like, and unicorns.
Like, that's not what I thought this movie was going to be about at all.
One of the things that I was really hoping was that this wasn't going to be... One of my biggest expectations was that I was hoping this wasn't just going to be a rehash of the first film. They did say it was going to be a continuation. Shane Black did this huge statement during his press junket saying this is not a reboot of the franchise. This is a continuation of the current franchise. We are moving forward and we're adding to the story. We're not going to rebuild it.
And they do a really good job of telegraphing that in the very beginning of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as soon as you meet Sterling K. Brown's character, he's referencing previous visits and, you know, I mean, like, he clearly has a broad understanding of and expectation for, you know, what happens when one of these creatures comes to Earth.
Yeah. Another unique part that I was hoping for was we've experienced Boyd Holbrook in one other film, which was in Logan, and even then it was an okay role. But him being the lead in this particular film, I kind of wanted to see more out of him. I was hoping to see him become more of a lead performer and not just a secondary character. Not that I didn't expect him to, like, not that I expected him to fail or fall flat on his face. I just wanted to see more out of a character than just a one-dimensional individual, which is technically kind of what you get with Logan. There's not much depth.
Sure. I mean, he's like the leader of the henchmen.
Exactly.
I mean, he's a featured performer, but he's not a main...
Exactly.
You know,
and
he's not a big bad.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that I really wanted to see with this particular character, because you look at the main characters. So if you look at the main characters of every Predator film, there's a heavy emphasis on the... Not that it has to be a male leader, but there's a heavy emphasis on the male leader of the group, the standout, if you will. Arnold Schwarzenegger in Predators. Danny Glover in Predators Part 2. Adrian Brody in Predators. Predators. Sorry, the first one is Predator. Predator 2 and then Predators. It's really confusing.
Yeah. And I would say... Yeah, I was curious because obviously this film was in production a year and a half ago, and I remember them announcing the cast and doing a cast photo, and you're like, oh, that's an interesting assortment of performers to be in a Predator movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of characters. Like, not characters. There are a lot of faces that you recognize in the cast,
mm-hmm.
which typically denotes a part of some stature, like they're not going to get killed off in the first 5 minutes.
No.
But Boyd Holbrook was specifically listed as the protagonist. He's the main protagonist character, and we had not yet seen him in Logan when they first released the cast photo and the list of performers for the film. And so, you know, it's sort of like, okay, well, I guess he did a good job in Logan because he got this role.
Yeah.
But then you watch Logan, and like you said, he's featured, but he's not. It's not a marquee part. Like,
no.
It puts your name on the map because it's a franchise comic book adaptation franchise piece. Hugh Jackman's last turn as Wolverine. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's definitely some draw there that's going to get him some exposure as another performer in the film. But here is his real chance to shine. You've got another franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Right at the very tail end of the summer blockbuster season, when your expectations aren't quite so high for the, you know, initial weekend return, monetarily speaking. And it's his movie to take, in my opinion. Olivia Munn steals this movie from him.
Oh, 100%.
In my opinion, I think that she was given more to work with, number one. Mm. And number two, I think she did a much better job with what she was given than he did.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And
also, Sterling K. Brown completely dominates any scene that he's in.
Oh.
And his Nicorette
without a
gun.
Doubt. And, oh, my gosh. That chewing was getting on my nerves. And just a quick note, there is one film in the entirety of the film expanded universe, I guess, if you want to say it, where an actual female is the lead protagonist, and that's Alien vs. Predator, the first Alien vs. Predator, where the female scientist is the one who ends up being the last person alive, ends up helping the Predator to destroy the xenomorphs that are there running amok. All the other films, however, have had male protagonists, and they're the ones who are... But the emphasis on them is to state that there has to be a performer ready to step outside of just the norm of what their surrounding is. You can't just be another merc. You can't just be another, you know, scientist or researcher amongst the group. You have to, you know, stand out. You have to step up and stand out as a performer. And obviously, like we said, Arnold Schwarzenegger has made his impact with that. Danny Glover is Danny Glover. So, you know, he does his thing. And then we all know what happened with Adrian Brody. So...
Actually, only you know what happened with Adrian Brody, because
very true.
Sadly, he lived.
We didn't bother.
He lived. So that movie ends with him living, thinking they're going to get off the island, and more people start coming to the... It's a ridiculous premise of
that.
Okay, so
back to
film.
This yeah. movie.
Sorry.
This was not meant to be a reverie of previous entries. So back to this movie. So going in...
Yeah. So going into the film, so we're going to go ahead and jump right in. And obviously the film starts with the inciting incident that causes everything to kind of start happening, where you have Boyd Holbrook's character.
First of all, you have a fanfare of music that sounds like Star Wars. I was very confused. You have a space battle between two spaceships that's like 4 seconds long. I mean, it's not like a protracted battle. But, like, it definitely leans into the sci-fi,
mm-hmm.
both visually and audibly with the soundtrack, right away. Mm. And then crashes to Earth and becomes a lot more terrestrial. So, right at the beginning, I was like, wait a minute, what kind of a movie am I supposed to be watching right now?
Yeah.
Because all the cues said Star Wars-level sci-fi for the first, like, minute and a half or so. But it's a Predator movie, so it really shouldn't be that way.
Yeah. With what is it? With the use of one of the Infinity Stones to open up a hole and jump right through.
Oh, yeah.
So,
that's for sure.
Like, without all the blue glow.
But so after this space galactic dogfight that happens, we are then introduced to Boyd Holbrook and his team, who are this, they're like this Navy SEAL type.
Yeah, they're like Delta Force.
Yeah.
They're in the Mexican... They're trying to stop a cartel exchange.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with the aliens, obviously.
No. But the ship that is running away ends up crashing into the Earth. The Predator gets out, destroys all of his team except for him, and he gets, you know, arrested by the government police and essentially forced into silence so that he doesn't say anything. While he's on the run, because he's on the run before he gets arrested, he does ship all these pieces of equipment that he stole from the actual ship, and he sends it to his son, or he sends it to a P.O. box that ends up going to his...
Right. He's got his own, like, P.O. box. He's estranged from his wife and his young son, who's played by Jacob Tremblay from The Room.
Mm-hmm.
And, what was the one with Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson with the...
Wonder.
Yeah, Wonder. You know, so we've seen him a couple times. He's a young performer, but we've seen him a couple times before. Ultimately, because the P.O. box hasn't been paid for a while, right after these objects are supposed to be stashed at the post office, the mailman comes and delivers everything to the family's home, even though Dad isn't there.
Yes. And so, as we said, he gets picked up. He's forced into silence. At the same time, we're introduced to Olivia Munn's character. Her character is not established as, like, what she is or what she does for a living. All I know is that she's out walking her dog and these government agents come up and say, you need to come with us. We'll take care of your dog.
We understand that
you're a stargazer. Like to gaze at the stars or something like that. It was a code phrase.
Yes.
Because she's already, you find out later, she's already on a short list of people to loop into something if something ever happens.
Yes.
Yeah, which is a really awkward way of like introducing someone when you have no idea who they are, what they do, other than the fact that they have a dog.
Yeah, and she's wearing like regular street clothes. She doesn't look like she's like some kind of professional teacher or professor. She looks like she just walked out of Starbucks.
Well, what do you look like when you're walking your dog in the park?
Well, if you're going to introduce a character, I was hoping at least that she looked somewhat
professorial.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, one of those tweed jackets and, you know, with the elbow patches and the
bifocals for sure.
Bifocals, a little balding on top. Olivia Munn balding on top.
Terrible.
But so she's brought into the fold. She's brought to this secure location.
Turns out she's a world-class, like, exotic biology professional, you know, expert person.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what they establish later.
Yes.
That's the reason why she's being brought there.
Yes. She's being brought to this secure location where she meets up with Jake Busey's character who plays...
Forgettable.
Here's the thing, though. I didn't know if you guys know this. He's supposed to be actually related to somebody in a prior Predator film.
Of course he is.
Oh, I knew that.
So he actually plays, his character is actually related to the character that his dad plays in part two.
Mm-hmm.
So in Predators 2, Gary Busey plays this government official named Peters, I believe. Could be wrong. Keyes. And he plays the son to that, which is really weird because Gary Busey and Jake Busey both look like they're on meth all the time. So,
but they look related, though.
They do.
They do look related.
They are. So that's... Good.
Sorry. No. So, and
you
then
you see the resemblance.
And then after that, you're introduced to a little bit more of who Sterling K. Brown character, who his character is. And I think that's one place to kind of just really sit for a second. If anybody has had experience with any performance by Sterling K. Brown, you know that he's usually a mild-mannered, either father figure or he's a brother to somebody, or he's, you know, in the familial sense, obviously he's in that perspective. He's always in that mindset. I have never heard that many curse words out of that man's. I didn't think this man knew that. It might be just my naivety, but like I looked at him like, no, you can't say that. Milo's going to smack your mouth. And, you know, just to get...
Okay, this is us.
It's
a different character.
It's definitely a different character.
And I would point out, he doesn't have an abundance of screen time. So the screen time that he's got, he has to totally chew it up.
100%.
And he does, with his gum.
With his gum.
But,
like you were saying earlier, when he's on screen... He's just a very large presence. Like your eyes immediately dart to wherever he is when he is on the screen. I don't know if that's something that he's always had. Like prior to, I could see him well with other people. Like he blends well in other performances. In this one, I was kind of more fixated every time he was on screen, whether or not he was speaking, saying something, standing, just... I don't know.
Here's the thing. He's the only character who knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
So, like, his confidence level, his knowledge level, and the fact that he's still a wild card the whole time, because you mm-hmm. don't know exactly what he's trying to do with his knowledge,
mm-hmm.
but you know based on his demeanor that it's probably not trustworthy or potentially anywhere close to legal, even if it is government sanctioned.
Yeah.
So, He is the wild element. By now, most of us, Spencer, sorry, I'm throwing you under the bus. Most of us have seen one of the Predator films. So in general, we know what to expect from, quote unquote, the antagonist.
Yeah.
That is the Predator figure. Obviously, this one has more than one and some dogs and things that we'll get into. But in terms of antagonists, he really is the, personality-wise, he is the antagonist of the film. And he is unpredictable to a certain point, and he is the only person who really has any broad concept of what's going on.
100%.
So, I mean, he's like the Predator Whisperer, kind of. So it's interesting because he does. He totally, it's sort of like, you know, like if you're looking at a flat greeting card versus a pop-up card, like he's the part that pops up at you every time you see him because mm-hmm. he has dimension, he has texture. You kind of do want to like peek around the edges to see if the pattern continues over behind. Like,
yeah,
because everybody else is one dimensional. Like almost without fail.
No, I agree, which is sad because of the fact that you have, going back to what we were saying earlier, you have a lot of characters who could have truly had a little bit more depth to them concerning what they were suffering with or what they were trying to portray what they were suffering with. Because then we jump into the group of mercenaries slash soldiers who are being sent away because of whatever ailment they have, whether if it's suicidal thoughts, just, you know, trying to kill other people, just really bad eggs, just kind of sum it up. And that includes, like we said, Keegan-Michael Key, Thomas Jane. You had Trevante Rhodes. There's a whole bunch of them. Alfie Allen. And a lot of these characters each suffer from something unique to themselves. Talking about Trevante Rhodes. Trevante Rhodes is somebody who tried to kill himself. I think out of all of them, I think he was one of the ones that had a little bit more depth than the rest of them. But like Keegan-Michael Key, who's just, I don't really know if you find out what's wrong with him other than just he's just crazy or psychotic. Thomas Jane's character has Tourette's, which is not translated very well. And you have individuals who just have some kind of some form of psychosis. But yeah, sadly, those really don't get translated well. In my opinion, I could be wrong, but I felt like they were just guys being guys for most of the film. I didn't really see any moment where it made me believe they were actually dealing with something serious, other than like Trevante Rhodes' character actually talking about certain parts of his, you know, mindset and his thoughts and so forth. That actually, it kind of like struck a true chord with me. It was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's something that I can totally see in somebody who may be dealing with stuff like that.
Yeah, he was kind of the only real exception for like the mental health like group. Because for most of them, like the second they're just like, oh, I'm this and this is my issue, I was like, and we'll never hear about this again, probably. And you'll just slowly become a regular group of awkward people.
Yeah, it was really interesting because when you first meet them, McKenna, who is Boyd Holbrook's character, his last name, his, you know, last name, soldier name is McKenna. So he's been questioned by authorities in the military. He's kind of called their bluff because he knows that they're trying to essentially paint him as somebody who is mentally unstable, who thinks that he's seen an alien. And so he kind of plays into it, and they put him on a bus with these other ex-soldiers who've also been diagnosed with various, you know, mental illness ailments of different kinds. And immediately they go through the introductions on the bus before the bus starts moving, and you get like, one guy's really good with explosives. One guy is a helicopter pilot. One guy cracks jokes. One guy, like, and you just, like, it's very clear that all of these people are going to have, like, one moment when their skill or their personality needs to have a moment later on in the story. What my big complaint with this movie is, I don't know why they decided, they being the script writers, the studio, Shane Black as director, etc. I don't know why they decided. I get the whole like misfit, don't fit in, you know, ex-soldier, you know, whatever. I get that you want to do, you know, not your typical I follow the rules and kill people kind of military grunt kind of personalities. I get that. And you want some comedy to offset the gore that's inevitable in a Predator movie. I understand that too. However, all of these characters have their own form of mental illness going on, and sorry, I get that it's a fluff piece, it's a popcorn flick, but they're completely not handled responsibly. Like, literally, they're all court jesters, essentially. Like, they're all clowns the entire time, with maybe one brief moment of heroism in each of them, you know, by the time, you know, most of them meet their demise. Sorry, yeah. Spoiler. But by the time something happens, maybe they're sacrificing themselves or they're doing something, you know, whatever. So you get like one brief moment in the last like second that you see the character. But other than that, they're clowns the entire time. And I think just given the social dynamic that we have in our culture today and what a completely appropriate focus we've started to put on mental illness in its various forms and needing to have something better than caricatured stigmas to fit people into. And I think not only with the mental illness with the ex-soldiers, but also McKenna's son, Rory, Jacob Tremblay, has Asperger's syndrome. And
which is never mentioned to the untrained individual who doesn't understand.
I mean, the bullies.
But that
the
was...
bullies use it as a taunt, and that's the only indication that you have for like why he's behaving the way that he is.
It didn't, for me, just, and I know I didn't mean to cut you off, but to say, like, for anybody who just goes in and plainly sees the film, they're not going to catch that unless you're aware of those types of triggers or how individuals who deal with that type of thing daily, how they react. Like, for me, it took me a minute until I realized, oh, he has Asperger's. Okay, the film never establishes that for me, whom I would have a little bit more of an understanding of how the characters, you know, trying to logically make things make sense if I had known that prior to, or if there was some type of establishment of that within the little boy. So, sorry, continue.
And his is treated a little bit better, oddly enough, by the, like, ultimate predator or whatever. Kind of gives him a little bit of respect for what he's able to do because of his Asperger's.
Yeah.
But yeah, by and large, just the whole, like, the area of human relatability and what an important topic mental illness is in our culture should have been for a much longer time than it is now, but it is now, like, a very important, very timely point of conversation and dialogue and ongoing awareness and, like, changing the stigmas and changing the way, you know, that our society as a whole handles the subject. This movie just doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, it's all played for comedy. I think it's overplayed for comedy, and by the end of the film, it left a really bad taste in my mouth.
And I do have to agree with you on that in the particular portrayal of those particular individuals, mostly because going back to what my biggest expectation was for the film was that this wasn't just another, you know, type of, it wasn't a reboot. It wasn't just going to rehash everything. It essentially does at the heart of it, because instead of creating a better portrayal of these types of individuals, Shane Black essentially recreates his old crew from the first film.
Right.
And just imprints them upon these guys in this film. So you have his character, who's the loudmouth individual who jokes and is very crass and very rude and just says whatever he feels. That's obviously Keegan-Michael Key's character. You have the individual who is tied to another character in the original one, Jesse Ventura and his friend, the bald African-American guy.
Right.
There's definitely a relationship like that in this film with Keegan-Michael Key's character and Thomas Jane's character. There's just too many similarities that happen in this film between this one and the first one to make me think maybe they were going to actually do something correctly to portray these types of illnesses or these types of mental states, and instead they just went the easy route and, like, well, we're gonna say that they have this, but they're gonna act like
the easy route, and it became the reason to laugh at them.
Well, I don't think they had any intention of ever, like, properly portraying these mental illnesses, because whenever, like, there was a time where someone was having, like, a reaction or something, the movie shuffled them away from, like, the main screen. Like, because there's a point where Keegan-Michael Key, like, is going through something, but, like, Thomas Jane's taking care of him, like, somewhere else while we're focusing on something else.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that this movie was ever meant to be a deep exploration of mental health. I think reducing it to comic effect, like, it, their mental illness, and especially Thomas Jane, his character's, like, outbursts are all, like, vulgar, loud, out of nowhere, and it's all, like, you're supposed to laugh, not just at what he's saying. I think that's what they went for, was, like, you're supposed to laugh at what he's saying because it's so inappropriate, but really, the film expects you to laugh at him, like, the character, for having that issue in the first place, that he can't control what comes out of his mouth. Because it's so over the top, you know, and so it's just like, and other things sort of, I just, there's a clear distinction between, Boyd Holbrook's character and Olivia Munn's character. And then the rest of that crew.
Yeah.
You know, there's a delineation there, and it's just like, it's all very caricatured, and I don't know why. You did it for the comedy effect, and that's irresponsible. You could have made crass, vulgar, impulsive ex-soldier characters who were misfits without giving them mental illness as any part of their story.
Yeah.
It feels to me like it was an unnecessary component that then kind of makes the whole subject laughable when it's not.
100%. And like you said, right now in this day and age, accurate portrayals of certain difficulties or mental states or even mental illnesses, it's kind of at the top of that, like, you know, of everybody's list in terms of what they're looking for in films. Like, you don't want to be that guy who creates a film based on some type of illness or some type of mental state or however, and totally just disregard that in the film. Because right now, the way Hollywood is scrutinizing every single piece of work that comes out of it, and the way individuals, movie critics, simple consumers of film, how much we are scrutinizing films nowadays, you don't want to be that guy. You don't want to be the person that says, oh, by the way, I have somebody in this film who has Down syndrome. And then they use the Down syndrome individual as comic relief.
Right.
That would be completely irresponsible. And honestly, probably they'd probably lose their ability to make movies in the near future. This is one of those instances where you have legitimate things that these people are dealing with. These people say they're facing, from not just the suicide, but from, you know, from things like we were saying earlier with the Tourette's. And the mental state of certain individuals who look like they had things going on, but they didn't really expand upon them. If you're not going to utilize that layer of depth for a character, if you're just going to state it and leave it as is and not explore that, don't be that guy. Don't be that person who says we're going to use it because it sounds cool to make this character say, oh, I was a mercenary, plus I have this. Or I used to be a soldier, and I suffer with this. Because unfortunately, the sad truth is that we have people like that in this current day. Many. And I'm sure she wouldn't mind us talking about it because we've talked about it before. But we've had a friend on here, Val, who is a former... She's a vet. And she also suffers from PTSD.
Veteran, not veterinarian.
No, like she's a
military veteran.
She's a military veteran. And she also suffers from PTSD. And I'm sure that if... I know for sure when she sees this film, this is going to be one of those talking points for her where she's going to ask, she's like, why were they allowed to make this film? It's going to offend her, as it should.
It would offend me. It kind of does offend me.
Oh yeah, no doubt. I mean, this is one of those types of things where you don't play with this. You don't just use it as a, this is not a place for lazy writing. Yes, I get it. You wanted to have a foot in the door to make it unique from the first film. You wanted to have something that gave this film more depth. You wanted to allow this film to blossom more into something more unique and not just a slasher sci-fi film. But you failed horribly by making it this cheap, quick, easy out of saying, oh, we're crazy, so that's why we say whatever's top of mind.
Right, and they lean really far into the comedy. Like, if you were to plot out sort of how much screen time is spent doing quote-unquote comedy versus quote-unquote action horror,
yeah,
I think comedy would win handily.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely.
And I totally understand the reason why you would want levity in a movie like this. There are other ways to accomplish it.
Going back to the first film, the first two films, actually, if you look at the first two films, the protagonist was one of those individuals who brought some of that, you know, the lighthearted jokes, even though they're in the middle of killing people, or you know, some like the line from Jesse Ventura where he, sorry, Spence, because
I'm just used to you throwing me under the bus.
Oh my gosh. No, there's a line that Jesse Ventura says in the first film where he got shot and he's bleeding, and a guy goes up to him. He's like, hey, you're bleeding. And he looks at him and he's like, I ain't got time to bleed. And it's just such a funny line in the midst of them battling against this guerrilla camp or whatever's going on. But it's a funny line in the midst of this chaos and craziness. And it gives a little bit of lightness to the scene. You jump to this and you know that they're making jokes. You know that they're trying to be funny. But sadly, you already have this filter in front of that of saying, okay, they're soldiers. They have mental illness and they're trying to be funny. You got to go through those two first to get to the comedic part of it. And you're like, you almost feel uncomfortable laughing because it's like, I don't know if I should be laughing.
I absolutely felt uncomfortable quite a few times. And not just because of the vulgarity of the jokes, but like, I get they're soldiers, they're rough people, you know, whatever, stereotypes and caricatures and whatever. But the fact that they were legitimately suffering from various forms of mental illness and you're supposed to laugh at that. Made yeah. me very uncomfortable. Like, I get the gallows humor. I get the, you know, the soldierly, like, camaraderie mm-hmm. that, like, makes fun of each other. You know, that whole thing. I mean, that's expected, I guess, in a certain way. Not to write off when you're mean to your friends and you shouldn't be. That doesn't make it right either. But I get the comedic value of that. I get the sort of the honesty in a way. You know, when you're portraying relationships that have that level of closeness, and that's okay, you know, between friends or characters who are friends. But the fact that they're all there for a reason, it's stated why they're there, and that's why you're supposed to find them funny, that really, after a while, it really rubbed me the wrong way. Yeah. It distracted me even from noticing when they did some of the really heroic redeeming things that they do by the end of their run, whenever that happens, whoever they are, because I was, in a way, I was kind of offended.
Yeah.
By that point, because you so overplay the comedy, you know, that it just became, to me, not very funny after a while. And after a very short while.
And I would say, here's kind of my, I guess, my leniency, which it's I hate to use the word leniency because it's not leniency, but my only thing is this, is that if they didn't continue to revisit it as often as they did, I don't know if maybe I may have been able to look past it after the first establishment of it in the bus scene that you see at the beginning. If they never mentioned it again, if they never said anything, if the film continued on and they just did whatever, then I would be like, oh, okay, they don't really suffer from mental illness. They're just playing it off or however. I could have probably looked past that. But the fact that they continue to revisit it, like Spence mentioned about the scene with Keegan-Michael Key and Thomas Jane, where he has this breakdown and he's shuffled aside off screen, there's all these constant revisits to that mindset. And you're like, well, wait, hold on. So do they have something going on? Because they're really not showing it very well, and they're kind of just throwing things all over the place in terms of the way they talk and what they say to each other. And it was really difficult to stay in the mindset of wanting to enjoy just a simple sci-fi alien flick, which is what this was. It was difficult to just enjoy that knowing that I also had to keep in mind that the individuals I was watching and the individuals that were making jokes and the individuals who were having, you know, the hitting out of the ballpark lines of like comedy were coming from individuals who were suffering from mental illness, which it was constantly thrown back into my face, reminding me they were suffering from mental illness. So,
yeah, that's a good point that you make, because obviously, like, for the right audience, the comedic dialogue mm-hmm. for the right audience is hysterically funny.
Yeah.
But the context within which the dialogue is delivered, and it is repeatedly referenced. I mean, these characters are like, mm-hmm. well, because I'm crazy, or because he's crazy, because we're crazy, because they're crazy, because, you know, like, it's always referenced.
Yeah.
And you're right, that does, it gets in the way.
What do you think, Spence?
So, honestly, like, as the movie was progressing, like, even though it kept coming up with, like, the exception of Thomas Jane saying, like, stuff every so often, I kind of just felt like the rest of them didn't really have any problems. Like, the movie's, like, making this case, like, oh, they kind of do, but, like, no, they don't. Not really. Because, like you're only coming up with a problem every so often and then not showing us like the whole thing that would be a part of like a mental illness. When you only see part of it, it's like it's not even there in the first place.
Sort of. I mean, yeah, it's almost like when it's convenient,
yeah,
to remind the audience, oh, by the way, this guy is crazy, which again, they do way too often.
Yeah.
Then suddenly it's rubbed in your face again. But otherwise, you could totally believe that they were just like somewhat madcap, you know, gallows yeah. humor, former soldiers.
Exactly.
But there was parts where I honestly forgot that was a subplot.
And it's true, because that's the thing. That's the problem with this film. And I say problem because of the fact that it truly is. It's not just a quirk. It's not just a misstep. It is a genuine problem that, yes, the film does take its time. Like Spencer mentions, it does take its time to step away from stating it, and everybody seems to be doing their own thing, and everybody's whatever, and then it'll jump back into that pond and say, hey, by the way, just in case you forgot, these guys are nuts, you know. It's like, and it doesn't say it like it's letting you know of a specific serious mental illness. It seems like it's telling you like some, you know, cavalier, like fun guy type of way, like, hey, we're crazy, man. Like, it seems like that's the way it's trying to translate it, and it makes it difficult to stay engaged because nobody wants to be that guy, you know, in terms of like the audience member. That's like going to see a movie, and you may not be the demographic for it, but you're in there and you feel uncomfortable laughing at certain parts because you feel like if you laugh, people are going to judge you for it. It's like, in this instance, socially, you shouldn't really laugh at things like that, because they don't mean to do it. Like, people with mental illness do not mean to do certain things like that. Like, people with Tourette's, they don't mean to just burst out and spurt like words and whatnot. They're not doing it for fun, you know.
And that's not always the way that it manifests itself.
No, 100%.
With like full vulgar phrasing and all that, you know. Like, again, it was very cartoonish. It was overemphasized. Mm-hmm. I think they could have better spent some of their money rather than trying to get familiar faces for those characters, like get better effects houses, because some of these effects in this movie, you guys, did not match the rest of them. Like, basically the whole climax scene, yes. I was very distracted. Granted, it happens in the daylight versus at night.
Yes.
You know, but like, I was very distracted for a lot of it because I'm like, wait a minute, when did we become like a Pixar horror film? Like, totally computer animated, cartoon, bubbly, whatever, bright colors.
Yeah.
Especially the blood, like the predator blood. Like, I'm like, wait a minute, like, why is it Gak all of a sudden?
That's yes! what I said. I was like, he's running in one of the scenes, and I'm like, Spencer, look. He's bleeding Gak. Because it was like little piles of green.
It's really distracting.
Yeah, it is.
Because it doesn't match. I mentioned to you afterwards. It reminded me a lot of the mishmash of digital effects in X-Men Origins Wolverine,
mm-hmm.
which yes, are yes. comically misaligned numerous times in that movie.
So bad.
This movie, there was a lot that made me think of that movie. Like, I was just like, wait a minute. Like, just, I don't know, the group that was doing better on those other scenes, hire them to redo these terrible ones.
Yeah. Which, it was something you actually had noticed at the end, yeah. tail end of the credits, as to how many different teams there were doing the special effects in this film.
Which is totally normal for a film that leans into visual effects like this, but you should still have somebody trying to like smooth out those differences. And I don't know if it was a timing thing or a budget thing or both, thing, yeah. but like it's not smooth. There are some really good effects in this movie, and there are some really poor effects in this movie, not the least of which is the scene right before the credits start rolling, which I still don't have words for it. I don't want to spoil anything, no. but like, I'm like, is this a totally different movie now? Like,
it really
is that
feel like it?
I felt like the last scene was a completely different movie.
100%. I agree. Totally.
Which is sad because it's a payoff of the entire conflict that yeah, has driven yeah. the entire rest of the movie.
No, 100%. I agree. And it's sad to say that not only visually did it begin to lose its luster towards like the last quarter of the film, but even in the overall just story of how it like lands the film, and I use the word land, you know, metaphorically, how the film kind of comes to a close, the story just takes this nosedive like way down south and hits the floor like in an explosion, because from the point where they actually have the interaction with the alien and to the closing right when the credits start, that entire part seems like it's completely different, set apart from mm-hmm. the entire film.
Yeah.
Like, I would have rather have had the first part as one film by itself, and then whatever this is, save it for the extra credit stuff, like for the deleted scenes in the Blu-ray yeah. or something. I could have totally did with that. But it didn't pay off for me. The CGI was just really rough at times, and I didn't enjoy the way it ended. Like, there were parts throughout the film that do give homage to the 80s film and even yep. the 90s film versions of that. And there's actually a payoff to the 2010s film. There's a
carryover. Yeah.
There's a carryover.
Some themes and plot points.
Exactly. And those were all great. It was like, okay, cool. I can see that they wanted to give honor to those films, and they did in their own way. And then as soon as that last quarter hit, it's like, all right, and we're going to turn the intensity down from 10 to 3. And it's like, whoa, 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 wait, is this still the same film, or is this like a student film now? I'm like, something about a anchor shift and something whatnot. I'm like, no, wait, what?
Was this sponsored by Coca-Cola?
Really? Seriously? So, I don't know. That last quarter really irked me. Among all the other things, that last quarter really kind of put the nail in the coffin for me in terms of how I really wanted to enjoy this film and how I ended up coming out of the film feeling.
Yeah, Spencer, I'm really curious. Having not seen the other films in the franchise, I'm really curious how, like, as a whole, how did this film register for you start to finish?
That was a very unique, like,
I mean, like, you're the, not to make a pun, but you're the fresh blood here. You're the new person to this franchise.
Freshman.
Like, obviously, minus the Arnold Schwarzenegger factor that has you excited about the first one, like, going back and finally seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did this sell you on the franchise?
This one sold me on the idea that there was probably better ideas that came before this movie.
This was so bad, there had to have been good ones.
Yeah, like honestly, yes. Because like for it to go on to this point, I'm like, well, there must be something good here
mm-hmm.
in like the previous entries, or there's no reason for us to even be here. Because one of the problems I had was like at the beginning of the last quarter of the movie,
mm-hmm.
like, when like people start getting picked off, it seemed like people were getting picked off a bit too fast, and I was like, wait, why did that person get picked off to begin with? Why did that happen? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, there was some oddities with that. Yeah, but overall, like, this movie was weird. Like, it really was. Just, like, from, like, how they handled, like, mental health things to, like, just the navigation of, like, oh, we have to get away from these people. Oh, we need to go over here. We need to do this. Oh, we switched production houses, and now it's, like, sponsored by Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
It was just very odd, really.
Double Dare. Suddenly, it's a Double Dare episode.
Oh, my gosh. But, like we said, that's kind of how this whole film kind of wrapped up. I mean, as great as this film could have been in terms of really, you know, launching further than where that 2010 film went and hitting home with where the first and second film really hit, you were hoping to see something closer to that heart. And unfortunately, the biggest red flag in this film was their ability to portray, or their inability, if you will, to portray mental illness, because you can't, it goes back to what we were saying earlier, you can't joke around with stuff like that. You know, that's not something that you can say, oh, we're going to make this person this way because it might be fun.
I mean, and I'm not normally like an uber like political correctness, like let's be PC about everything. Like, I understand you have crass characters in movies, you have you have archetypes and you know, whatever. I get that. But I think that there is also a certain level of responsibility
100%
that filmmakers should take with such broad-reaching, deep issues such as mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
I do understand sometimes there's a purpose to make somebody like a clown or a cartoon character in a live-action movie. I get it. But to have six somebodies, and that's the reason that they're there, is for you to laugh at them because of their mental illness, that's really irresponsible and distracting. Not to say that there aren't redeemable parts of the movie.
No.
I think there are quite a few redeemable aspects in this movie that are better than some of the other installments in, well, at least the extended universe of the franchise, if such a term can be applied here. But yeah, it's so haphazard. Like, it felt by the end to me, it felt so ramshackle. Like, wait, is this a sports car or is it a jalopy? Because I can't tell anymore.
Yeah.
I really felt like there were some sequences and plot lines that were pretty laser focused.
Yeah.
And made sense for the franchise. And then there's a bunch of this random chaos just kind of, I don't know, swirled all through the whole thing.
Yeah, 100%. And
by the end, you're left with more of the chaos than the intentional stuff. And it really leads me to believe, especially given how gnarly the effects are at the end, I really suspect that they did test screenings. They didn't have a favorable reaction to whatever this used to be. And the studio said, change this, 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 and this. And you've got 10 days, and this effects house had to do some pretty terrible work on a very short time frame to make something that they thought was gonna please more people by the end, and it really just confuses the whole mix.
Yeah.
I bet you're right.
It's my suspicion. Because
you're probably right.
There's like things that are just like, okay, that didn't end well. Like, there a lot of stories, TV, movies, whatever, endings are hard to do well. And so there's a lot of stuff that you get to the end and you're like, well, that was unsatisfying. But this one is just like, I'm sorry, what's going on? Like, did you change the kind of story that we're watching in the last 27 minutes? Because that's definitely what it felt like for me.
Yeah. And like I said, what I mentioned earlier, I was really hoping, I really wanted this film to work. I really wanted to see somebody take back that mantle that, you know, guys like Arnold Schwarzenegger or Danny Glover really established with the first two films. That was kind of muddied a little bit with Adrian Brody's character. And hopefully Boyd Holbrook was going to come in and really take that upon himself. You can tell they were setting out to do that. It just didn't get executed well. And unfortunately, there were too many things that were in the way of that translation to me as a consumer. And so, yeah, this was a really hard film to watch because I wanted it to work. I wanted it to be great. I wanted it to totally, you know, entirely just succeed because of the fact that I want to see more of these types of films come out. Like, who doesn't like who doesn't like Predator films? Who doesn't like science fiction alien films? They're fun. They're just weird and unique. Right, Spence?
Yeah.
Yeah. And mind you, we haven't mentioned, obviously, the whole situation going on with Olivia Munn and Shane Black and that whole thing. And mind you, that's not a part, just for the sake of anybody out there who's listening, who's wondering, oh, they're not talking about this. That doesn't play any effect in terms of how we review the film. We're looking at the film as itself. We're not basing anybody else's character, personal character, you know, are there private matters or their decisions off?
Hey, I will gladly talk about it for a quick second.
Okay.
Because I do not get, given the movie that we saw a day ago as of the recording of this episode, given the movie that we saw and how, yes, Sterling K. Brown totally chews up every scene that he's in, pun intended. Olivia Munn is the only other character that has any chance of working start to finish.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
her
yeah.
character is the only one, and part of that is because of the work that she put into it as the performer. Because her character doesn't make any more sense than the rest of them. She just did a better job and was overall more relatable and likable in certain key aspects. So the fact that she's being isolated and doing press junkets by herself doesn't make any sense. You know, and I'm glad that Sterling K. Brown came and said, I didn't realize this was going on because I wasn't on that part of the press tour.
Yeah.
You know, and I should have spoken up sooner, and here's why. Like, I totally respect him for doing that because it literally doesn't make any sense.
Boyd Holbrook also came out today, I believe it was, and did the same thing.
Yeah.
So
it's like that why? Like, she's the only thing that worked start to finish in the movie because she has more screen time than Sterling K. Brown. And you're forcing her, you're punishing her, you're making her sit in the dunce corner to go talk with people by herself.
Yeah.
Because she did something that was like humanly responsible and called out a truth, you know, about a scene that's not even in the movie.
No.
It ended up on the cutting room floor, but, you know, it's just like the whole thing is a weird dynamic, but the reaction that, and this is not necessarily even a Shane Black thing, like the studio decides who sits together and whatever for their press junkets and everything. So, you know, shame on you guys. I mean, honestly, it really makes an even bigger deal out of things.
Yeah.
It certainly doesn't downplay it. It emphasizes and underscores, you know, the awkwardness of all of it and draws even more attention to you. So in a way, I guess maybe that's an okay thing.
No,
to
100%.
Draw more attention to the awkward. And if you don't know what we're talking about, you can Google it. It's you'll find news.
You can look on Variety, Hollywood Reporter. Everybody's talking about it currently. So go ahead and check it out. But before we wrap this thing up, any last thoughts, any last concerns, anything? Spencer, I see you got a look of concern on your face. Anything that you have another issue with about the film? Do you know who Arnold Schwarzenegger is?
Yeah, no, I know who that guy is. I've seen him before. No, just like, I really wish they had just done without the mental illness stuff, really. Would have worked fine if they were just, you know, crazy people who were socially awkward. Because, really, you have to put the question of, is it wise to give people with problems like that weapons again?
That's a great point.
Because especially one of them had a problem with shooting people on his own side.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems
right.
like a
That's
bad
right.
idea.
Keegan-Michael Key's character is the one who friendly fire.
Yeah.
What about you, Chad? Any last thoughts before we wrap this up?
No, I mean, I do, to be fair, there were, we said this a couple times, but there were some redeemable sequences, some redeemable effects in the film. There were some things that had the glimmer of something really compelling and would have been a worthy evolution of the franchise that, unfortunately, I don't feel like they really pursued the right story elements in this particular installment.
Yeah.
Hopefully, if it does well in the theaters, then they've planted the seeds for a better movie that comes next.
Hopefully. Hopefully. So, with that said, let's go ahead and go around the table and start with Spence. Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
Pass or fail?
Oh, man. Mm.
That is really hard. I'm going to fail this one.
Ooh.
Not because, like, you know, the whole thing is garbage, but because there's quite a few, like, problems, especially revolving around mental illness stuff that can be hard to get over or through. Like, even though, like, I had a hard time, like, remembering that they even had problems to begin with, because, like, they said it and I kind of just immediately threw it out because I knew they weren't going to handle it with any, like, type of sincerity.
Dignity.
Yeah. So, yeah, this movie fails really because of that. And they could have done so many easier things than that. I really don't understand why they did that. Score, I'll give it, like, 2.5. Because, like, if you can just take out the mental illness part, the movie has some really good parts that worked. It's kind of funny, surprisingly funny, maybe suspiciously funny.
Suspicious.
Like, because I don't feel like it should be like that. Like, have as much comedy based on, like, how other people see, like, the previous films.
Like, no, it all fit.
Well, like, I'm not saying it didn't fit. I'm just saying, like, it seems like it should have been more, like, action-based.
Yeah, the others are not. This is a comedy movie with an alien that kills people. Like, what they are. But this one, kind of by the end, you kind of do feel like this is a comedy movie with an alien that kills people or two of them.
Yeah, no, that's how this feels.
Yeah, and that part, I agree, that doesn't really match tonally with the rest of the series.
And I came to that conclusion without seeing any of the other ones.
Well,
wow.
And how many monocles did you give it?
A cookie.
Two.
Two monocles. All right, Chad, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
Unfortunately, this movie does also fail for me. Sheesh. That was not a hard decision on my part. There are things that I legitimately did enjoy about the film. I thought that there were a lot of moments of promise that it just squandered. So, and it left a bad taste in my mouth by the end, both on account of the mental illness stuff that we have talked about quite a bit, and the visual effects. I mean, come on, people. You've got to learn from X-Men Origins Wolverine. Like, you just have to. And it just, by the end of it, like, if I'm zooming out and pretending like I'm sitting in the writer's room or whatever, which I like to do, you guys know this.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm zooming out and looking at this thing start to finish, I'm like, okay, you guys didn't really have a strong, clear direction. You should not have made this movie yet. You should have figured out what you wanted to say so that everything unified around one main theme or point. And I highly suspect that there was a lot of last minute changing that happened based on test screenings with test audiences. I think that there was quite a bit that shifted in the back quarter of the movie, as we've discussed. So I'm going to give it one monocle because there were some redeemable things. I wish that it would have been better. I really do wish that it would have been a better movie.
And I have to agree with both of your mindsets. I do believe the film has to be scrutinized alongside not just with what has been done, as I said earlier, what has been done recently, but with the whole franchise entirely, as well as the mindsets of 2018 and moving forward. It's just the common sense aspects of, you know, film. You can't do what we did 10 years ago. You can't do what you did 20 years ago or 30 years ago. You have to... Or 4 years ago, exactly. Hollywood's mindsets are constantly evolving, and there is a consistent amount of evolution that happens every year within film, within Hollywood, within that entire dynamic, that entire community. So with that, you have to always have that in mind whenever you create a film, whenever you create anything. You have to recognize, where does the sensitivity begin and where does my story end?
Yeah.
You know, where can I differentiate the two? So unfortunately, with that said, I'm also going to have to fail the film. I am going to give it 2 monocles out of 5. Now, I know that sounds generous, but it's 2 monocles one for each of those dogs because I thought the dogs were cool.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't stand the dogs.
I thought they were cool.
The dogs needed to be deleted. Like, to show them, fine. But then...
They were the most... They were the more efficient predators out of all of them. So I just felt like, okay, they work
for me. Are you
for
real right now?
It's very confusing.
We're going to have words after this is done recording.
Because, like, one of those dogs, like, loses its memory or something and then becomes Olivia Munn's puppy.
I want that puppy. It didn't make any sense.
It really didn't. I didn't understand why it wasn't killing them.
Well, with that said, that about wraps up another awesome episode. Again, let us know what your thoughts are when you check out the film this week. The film does debut this Friday, so we'd love to hear your thoughts on all our social pages and our websites. Of course, if you're not going to check out this film, there's a couple other weekend releases such as A Simple Favor, Unbroken, Path to Redemption, and White Boy Rick. So if you're going to go check out any films this weekend, check out one of those. By the way, A Simple Favor, actually, I saw the trailer to it today. It actually looks really interesting. So who knows?
Yeah, they kind of snuck that one in. That really didn't have any kind of a buildup. And then it's like, and it's out this week.
Exactly. I was just like,
very
Kendrick's
odd.
In a movie?
I'm like, did you just have a marketing budget of $12? Is that what happened?
Right, exactly. We just were able to get it into the theater.
It's probably one of those movies that they've had on the shelf for like a year and a half. Mm. And they're like, we're going to just like soft release it and get some money back.
I agree. So, as we said, this about wraps up the episode. Check out our previous episodes on our website at filmlossifers.com. Remember, we have 129 other episodes, so if you don't like this film, you can check out the other ones.
Absolutely.
But
it's like weeks of content to listen to.
Tons of content.
What a dream come true.
Yes, sir. So, from all of us, Spencer's looking at us like we're nuts.
Spencer's already looking at next week's schedule. He's like, what can we watch next time that's going to be better?
You know me well, Chad.
We've had two rough ones in a row.
There you go. Well, with that said, from all of us here at the Film Philosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.